his school coat pocket and tossed it over to Kayoko. Then he painfully closed his eyes. "Okay. Now go."
"What?"
Hiroki suddenly opened his eyes wide and yelled, "Go now! Someone might have heard the shot. Go!" Then, as if fitting the pieces of a complex jigsaw puzzle into place, Kayoko finally managed to get it. This time she got it right.
"Oh. Oh."
She dropped the gun and fell on her knees beside him. She scraped her knees, but she didn't care.
"Hiroki? Hiroki, I can't believe I did this to you."
She burst into tears. Sure, there was something intimidating about Hiroki Sugimura. He seemed tough since he studied martial arts. Plus, he didn't talk much. And when he did, he was always gruff. When he spoke to the other boys, like Shinji Mamura and Shuya Nanahara, he would smile. But otherwise, he looked grumpy. She also heard he was going out with Takako Chigusa, and they seemed so close. Kayoko only thought,
"I don't get Takako's taste. I wonder maybe if you're that pretty, you're attracted to someone intimidating."
That was her impression of him. So now, as her classmates were being killed off one by one, she was absolutely terrified of Hiroki Sugimura. But then it turned out that... He closed his eyes again and said, "It's all right." He was smiling. He looked content. "I was going to die soon anyway." Kayoko then finally noticed he had another wound on his side, one soaked in liquid that wasn't rain. "So go now. Please." Kayoko sobbed convulsively and touched his neck gently.
"Let's go together, okay? Stand."
Hiroki opened his eyes and looked at her. He seemed to be smiling. "Forget about me," he said. "I'm just glad I got to see you."
"What?"
Kayoko opened her tear-filled eyes wide.
"What? What did he just say?"
"What do you mean?" Her voice was trembling. Hiroki exhaled deeply, as if to bear the pain, or maybe it was a long sigh. "If I tell you, will you go?"
"What? I don't get it. What do you mean?"
Hiroki said without hesitating. "I love you, Kotohiki. I've loved you for a really long time." Kayoko once again didn't understand.
"What's he talking about?"
Hiroki looked up at the sky raining down on them. "That's all I wanted to tell you. Now, go."
"But I thought you and Takako..."
Hiroki looked into her eyes again. "You're the one," he said. She finally got it. She was blown away, as if struck by a huge wrecking ball swinging from a demolition crane.
"Love me? You wanted to tell me... Don't tell me you were trying to find me. Is that true? If so, then what did I just do?"
Her breath was raspy. She kept on getting choked up, but finally she managed to cry out.
"Hiroki! Hiroki!"
"Hurry," Hiroki said, and coughed out a mist of blood, spraying Kayoko's face. Hiroki opened his eyes again.
"Hiroki, I...
Her body was dehydrated from lack of water, but the tears kept on gushing out. "It's all right," Hiroki said kindly. He closed his eyes slowly. "Kayoko?" He called her by her first name as if it were a precious treasure. It was probably the first time he had ever called her by her first name. "I don't mind at all, dying because of you. So please, please go. Or else..." Kayoko kept on crying, waiting for Hiroki to continue. "Or else?" Hiroki didn't say anything. Kayoko slowly reached out for him. She held his shoulders and shook them.
"Hiroki!"
In a TV drama, when someone died, their words would be cut off, like, "or L." But Hiroki managed to say in a painful but clear voice, "Or else." So there had to be more. "Or else..."
"Hiroki! Hey, Hiroki!"
Kayoko shook his body one more time.
Then she finally realized he was dead. Once she understood, the dam restraining her torrent of emotion suddenly collapsed. A shriek welled up inside.
Ah!
On her knees, Kayoko fell over Hiroki's body and cried. He loved me. He loved me so much he sought me out at the risk of being attacked. He was in danger this whole time with every step. In fact, the wound in his side, the wound on his shoulder, came as a result of him trying to find me. No, there was more. Kayoko stopped sobbing for a moment. I was the one who attacked Hiroki. At the very end, when Hiroki managed to achieve his goal, Kayoko shut her eyes and cried again. He loved me. Just like I wanted to tell that guy how I felt about him, Hiroki was thinking the same thing about me, looking for me. Someone in my class cared for me that much. And yet... Suddenly, Kayoko recalled the scene. It was when they were doing their cleaning tasks. Kayoko was wiping the blackboard with a wet rag, and when she couldn't reach the top, Hiroki, who had been resting his chin against his hands, which were holding the upright broom as if it were a cane, said, "You're too short, Kotohiki." He took the rag from her and wiped the area she couldn't reach. The scene came back to her. Why didn't I see how kind he was? How could I not notice how someone loved me so much? If I'd thought about that, I would have realized if Hiroki wanted to kill me, he could have immediately shot me with his gun. But I couldn't tell. I wasn't able to understand. I am so stupid. Another memory came flashing by. When she was telling some of her classmate friends about the tea guy, Hiroki, who was nearby looking out the window, muttered, "You're being foolish, getting so worked up like that." It made her mad at the time, but in fact he was right. She was being foolish. And yet Hiroki told her he cherished this fool. She simply couldn't stop crying. She pressed her cheek against his warm cheek and sobbed. Hiroki told her to go, but she couldn't bring herself to do that. "I'm going to keep on crying. I'm going to cry over the dedication. It was irreplaceable. Of this boy who loved me and my foolishness. I was such a kid thinking I was actually in the running for that guy. I'm going to keep on crying, even if it was suicidal." "You plan on dying with him?" a voice whispered to her in her thoughts. "Yes, I'm going to die with him. I'm going to die for the sake of Hiroki's love for me and my foolishness." "Then why don't you go ahead?" the voice said. Kayoko suddenly trembled and turned around. She saw the long, beautiful, rain-drenched hair of Mitsuko Sauma, female student number 11. Mitsuko was gazing down at her, gun in hand. Two sharp shots. Then two bullets formed a pair of holes in Kayoko's right temple. Kayoko's body collapsed on Hiroki Sugimura's. Blood slowly began flowing out of the holes in her head, streaming down her face as it mixed with the rain. Mitsuko lowered the Smith & Wesson M19 357 Magnum and said, "You really were a fool. You should have understood him." Then she looked over at Hiroki's face. "Long time no see, Hiroki. Are you glad you got to die with your beloved?" She shook her head, disgusted, and glanced around for the Smith & Wesson M59 Kayoko had dropped and the Colt Government 45. Which had been Mitsuko's, Hiroki had tossed aside. She looked down at the intertwined bodies and put her finger against her lips. "Now what was that about building a fire?" Then she shook her head. With her foot, she brushed away Kayoko's skirt, which was covering part of the M59. As she reached for the blue gun, she suddenly heard the rattling sound of an old typewriter. 6 students remaining. Chapter 69. Her back was pummeled repeatedly. Her chest burst open with blood. She staggered and felt something hot expand inside her, like burning embers. More than the shocking pain, she felt dismayed. How could she have not heard someone sneaking up behind her in this mud? The bullets had done considerable damage, but Mitsuko managed to turn around. There was a boy in a school coat. The unique slicked back hair, the well-defined face, the gleaming, frigid eyes. It was Kazuo Kiriyama, male student number 6. Mitsuko squeezed the M19 in her right hand. Her body was shutting down, but she summoned all her remaining strength and attempted to raise the gun. Suddenly, Mitsuko's thoughts, despite the fact that she was in a life-or-death confrontation, slipped into another dimension. It only lasted for a split second. When I spoke to Hiroki Sugimura, I said, "I just decided to take instead of being taken." That's what I said. When did I become like that? Was it after the time I told Hiroki about that time when I was videotaped as I was raped by 3 men in a rundown apartment in the shabby outskirts of town? Or maybe it was the moment my drunken mother, I never had a father, left me there after she received the thick envelope. It couldn't have been that thick. From then on? Or was it after my elementary school teacher, the one person I thought I could trust, kindly addressed me as I was numb from trauma and I told him exactly what happened? Then the look on his face changed and it happened again? Is that when it started? In that small, dark reading room after school? Or after my best friend saw it, at least part of it, and instead of offering consolation, spread a rumor, which led to the teacher leaving the school? Or was it 3 months later when I resisted my mother, who was trying to take me to do it again, and accidentally ended up killing her? After getting rid of all the evidence and doing everything to make it look like a break-in, I sat on a swing in the park. From that point on? Or after being taken in by my distant relatives, I was repeatedly harassed by their kid, and when she accidentally fell from the roof, the mother accused me of killing her since I was with her. From that point on? The father intervened and defended me, but then after a while, he started fooling around with me. From that point on? Or, little by little? No. More like in big chunks. Everyone took from Mitsuko. No one gave Mitsuko anything, and so Mitsuko ended up an empty shell. But that didn't matter. I am right. I will not lose. Her arms were suddenly strengthened, and she lifted the gun. The tendons in her wrist rose up, resembling violin strings. Then she pulled the rattling Ingram M10 in Kazuo Kiriyama's hands fired away, blasting a row of 4 holes that ran from her chest up to the middle of her head. Blood sprayed out of Mitsuko's mouth. Her upper lip tore. She bent backwards. Still, Mitsuko managed to smile. She regained her footing and pulled the trigger. Over and over. The 4 bullets from the chamber struck Kazuo Kiriyama's chest. But Kazuo remained calm as he staggered only slightly. Mitsuko didn't understand why. Kazuo's Ingram then fired away again. Mitsuko's face, once so beautiful, was torn up as if a strawberry pie had been flung into it. This time her body was blown back, and the next moment she fell back onto the wet ground. By then she was dead. In fact, she may have been dead a while ago. Physically, several seconds ago. Mentally, ages ago. Kazuo Kiriyama walked up to her slowly and calmly removed the gun from her hand. He picked up the Colt Government 45 lying by Hiroki Sugimura's hand, and the M59 Kayoko Kodihiki had dropped. He didn't even bother glancing at the 3 rain-drenched bodies. 5 students remaining. Chapter 70. Mizuo Inada, female student number 1, cautiously looked out from the shade of the bushes. Due to the relentless rain, her neatly cropped hair stuck to her forehead. Beyond the bushes, there was a narrow farm field, and through the light sheet of rain, she saw the back of a school coat in the middle of the field. His slicked back hair was also wet from the rain. It was Kazuo Kiriyama, male student number 6. Kazuo Kiriyama had formed what appeared to be 2 piles of branches. Now he sat arranging one of the piles. Mizuo calmed her breathing. It was cold and she was tired, but she didn't really mind. After all, she was about to execute her most important mission. As a space warrior. Are you ready, Warrior Prexia Dikian Mizuo? In her mind, the god of light, Ahura Mazda, asked her this. For her, this voice came from the spindle-shaped magic crystal. In fact, the mail order item was made of glass, but Mizuo believed it was crystal. She wore. Of course, Mizuo responded. I saw that demon walk away after killing Yumiko Kusaka and Yukiko Kitano. I lost track of him, but I just found him again. And I saw him kill that other demon who killed Kayoko Kotohiki. I must defeat this enemy, and I have followed him this far. Very well, then. So you understand your mission? Of course, sir. I received your message from the local fortune teller that I would become a warrior destined to fight evil. I didn't understand what it meant at the time, but now I understand completely.
Are you not frightened?
No, sir. With your guidance, I have nothing to fear.
You are a surviving member of the Holy Dikian tribe. You are a chosen warrior. The light of victory will shine upon you soon.
Hmm?
What is it?
No, it's just that, great Ahura Mazda, my fellow warrior, Lorella Lausas Kaori, was killed.
In their former Class B classroom, Kaori Manami, who spent some time hanging out with Mizuo Inada, would restrain herself from yawning every time Mizuo told her, "You're the warrior, Lorella." But whatever.
She
fought to the very end, Mizuo.
I thought so, but she was defeated by the evil forces.
Yes. Well, that was because she was a mere commoner in origins. You are different. In any case, let's not fuss over the details. The important thing is that you must fight for her sake, and you must win. All right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, then. The light. You must have faith in the cosmic light. The light that engulfs you.
The light grew inside her. The great, warm, cosmic power that encompassed everything. Mizuo nodded again in her brief repose. Yes, yes,
yes.
Then she pulled the double-bladed knife. When she'd found the weapon in her day pack, she thought it most becoming of a warrior, out of its sheath. She held it up in front of her face. A white light covered the blue blade, and Mizuo looked at Kazuo beyond the light. She saw Kazuo's back. It was wide open.
Now then, you must cut down the enemy.
Yes.
In order to keep quiet, Mizuo dodged the bushes and dashed toward Kazuo. A light burst out from the short blade that had been barely 15 centimeters in length, and it suddenly transformed into a legendary sword at least 1 meter long. This sword of light would pierce the evil monster with a single thrust. As Kazuo Kuriyama adjusted the branches with his left hand, his right hand calmly pulled out the Beretta M92F. Without even turning around, he reached around and pulled the trigger twice. The first shot hit Mizuo in the chest, stopping her, and the second shot went right through her head. Mizuo fell back as her wounds burst into gently curved red lines drawn through the air. The rain immediately began washing away the blood. Then the warrior, Prexia Dikian Mizuo's soul, transmigrated to the land of light. His back still facing her, Kazuo Kuriyama put away his gun and continued arranging the branches. 4 students remaining. Chapter 71. It continued to rain. Shuya was slouched against the wet rock wall as he watched the rain dripping off the edge of the thatched roof. He heard rapid gunfire. Then about 5 minutes later he heard gunfire again, this time 2 shots from a sidearm. Both times it didn't sound too close,
but it didn't seem too far off either. It was probably somewhere near the northern mountain, where they were camping. A large raindrop slid along one of the roof leaves and fell by Shuya's stretched out foot, splashing against the muddy water. Maybe Hiroki likes Kotohiki. That was what Noriko had said. If I were him, I would have done the same thing. She glanced at Shuya. I would find the person I cared about. Was it true? Did Hiroki like Kayoko Kotohiki? Why, when he was so close to the prettiest girl in their class, would he be into a plain Jane like Kayoko? Well, maybe that was how it was. Didn't Billy Joel have a song about liking people just as they are? Then who was involved in those rounds of gunshots he just heard? The second series of shots sounded like just one assailant shooting away. If he were to include the gunfire he heard immediately after leaving the lighthouse, it meant he'd heard guns go off 3 times since noon, not including what had happened to Yuki Utsumi's group. It would be reasonable to assume at least 3 people had died. Then there were only 5 left. Which 3 got killed? Or maybe no one died at all. Maybe there were just confrontations, and everyone managed to escape each other. Then 8 students, including Shuya's group, were left. Are you tired, Shuya? They were sitting next to each other in a row, but Shogo, who was on the other side of Noriko, asked, Maybe you should sleep a little. Shuya looked back at them. No, he gave a smile. I slept a lot until noon. I bet you haven't had much sleep. Shogo shrugged. I'm fine, but Noriko, she didn't sleep at all waiting for you. Shuya looked over at Noriko, but she waved her palms at Shuya and smiled. That's not entirely true. I dozed off a little here and there. Shogo's the one who hasn't slept, for my sake. Shogo chuckled and shrugged. Then he held his right hand up to his chest in a salute and said, I shall always guard you, Your Highness. Noriko grinned, touched his hand, and said, The honor is mine, Shogo. Shuya raised his brow and observed their interaction. It was odd how close Noriko and Shogo seemed now. When they had first gotten together, Noriko seemed to speak to Shogo mostly through Shuya. But now things seemed different. They seemed like a good pair on their own. It was only natural, though, given how they'd spent over 1/2 a day without Shuya. Shogo suddenly pointed at Shuya and said, Uh-oh, Shuya's getting jealous. Noriko opened her eyes wide and looked at Shuya. She smiled and said, No. Shuya blushed a little. I am not. What are you talking about? Shogo shrugged. He raised his brow and said to Noriko in mock exasperation, He says he trusts you out of love. Shuya wanted to say something, but he was speechless. Shogo began laughing, cracking up, really. Despite the urge to protest, Shuya ended up going along with it and chuckled too. Noriko was smiling. It was a brief but wonderful moment. It was the kind of conversation and laughter you'd share with your longtime friends, hanging out with them after school at your favorite cafe. Of course, looming over them was the feeling that they were all here after attending a friend's funeral. Still smiling, Shogo looked down at his watch and went outside to check again for a signal from Hiroki. Noriko grinned and looked at Shuya. Shogo likes to kid around. Shuya smiled. Yeah, but... He squinted at the open space. I might have been jealous. Shuya looked back at Noriko. He was about to tell her in a joking way, I may have been jealous. Then Noriko would probably laugh and say, Yeah, right. Shogo looked out the front of the shelter. His stubbly face was moist with raindrops. I see smoke, he said, and immediately turned around. Shuya quickly got up. He helped Noriko up with his uninjured right arm. They walked to where Shogo was standing. The rain was light now, and he could make out the smoke drifting across the sky. As he followed Shogo's eyes, he saw a white column of smoke on the opposite side of the northern mountain. 2 columns, in fact. Right on! Without thinking, Shuya gave a little holler out as if he were Little Richard at the piano.
Yow!
His eyes met Noriko's. Noriko, no less enthusiastic, broke into a grin and said,
"So Hiroki's safe."
Shogo took out the bird call from his pocket and tweaked it as he observed the smoke. The cheerful chirping of a little bird rose and spread out into the rain covering the island. Shogo checked his watch. When 15 seconds had elapsed, he stopped. Shogo then looked over at them.
"Let's wait a little more here. My guess is he won't hear this sound unless he's close. It'll take time." They returned underneath the roof.
"Hiroki probably found Kayoko," Noriko said.
Shuya was about to nod, but stopped when he saw Shogo's mouth stiffen. Noriko also stopped smiling.
"Shogo?" Shuya said.
Shogo looked up, then he shook his head.
"It's nothing. I just think things might not be what they seem."
"Huh? But..."
Shuya raised his open right palm.
"Hiroki would never give up, though."
Shogo nodded.
"That might be true."
He stopped and then looked away from them.
"But he might have only found Kayoko Kotohiki dead."
Shuya's face became tense.
He was right. Kotohiki seemed to be alive up until noon, but there had been all that gunfire.
They just heard those single shots. After searching around for 2 days, Hiroki might have ended up discovering Kayoko Kotohiki had died.
Shogo continued.
"Or there might have been a totally different outcome."
Noriko asked, "What do you mean?"
Shogo took out a pack of cigarettes and answered curtly,
"It's very possible Kayoko didn't trust Hiroki."
Shuya and Noriko both fell silent.
Shogo lit his cigarette.
"Well, in any case, let's just hope Hiroki can make it back here. We'll see then whether he's with Kayoko or not."
Shuya was hoping Hiroki would return with Kayoko Kotohiki. Then there would be 5 of them. 5 of them could escape. Only 5.
Shuya then recalled that Mizu Inada was still alive. At least she had been at noon.
"Shogo."
Shogo glanced at Shuya.
"Inada is still alive. I wonder if we can contact her."
Shogo shrugged.
"I keep on saying this, but it's best not to trust the others too much in this game. To be honest, nothing against Hiroki, but I don't necessarily trust Kotohiki either."
Shuya bit his lip.
"I know, but..."
"Well, if we can afford to, then I'll come up with some way to contact Mizuo, but..."
He blew out smoke.
"Don't forget, we may not be around to do that."
Shogo had said, "At the very end, once everyone else is dead, there's a way out."
That meant no matter what, they would have to confront Kazuo again and also take on Mitsuko Selma. He wasn't sure about Mitsuko, but there would be no way around fighting Kazuo. There was no way Kazuo could die easily, which meant that everyone in Shuya's trio might die fighting him.
Shogo puffed on his shortened cigarette and said, "I'm going to ask you again, Shuya."
He exhaled a puff of smoke and continued to stare at Shuya.
"Even if we manage to hook up with Hiroki, we're probably going to have to fight Kazuo again and Mitsuko. Are you prepared to be merciless?"
So that was what it came down to. They could afford to contact Mizuo Inada only after they defeated Kazuo and Mitsuko. Although he wasn't comfortable with how he'd gotten used to the idea of killing his classmates, no matter how extreme the circumstances were.
Shuya nodded.
"I am."
4 students remaining. Chapter 72. Shogo tweaked the bird call. It was the 3rd time. The rain was now lightening up, and the drops falling off the edge of the roof became less frequent. It was already past 5 p.m. After he heard the same bird sounds 4 times, Shuya managed to join up with Noriko and Shogo, but that was because he had some idea of their location. It could take Hiroki longer to find them since he didn't have that information. Shogo returned under the roof and lit a wild 7. He blew out smoke and asked out of the blue, "Where do you want to go?" Shuyu looked at Shogo, who was sitting on the other side of Noriko. Shogo turned toward him.
I forgot to mention it, but I have a connection. Once we get out of here, we can stay there for the time being.
Who's that? Shuyu asked, and Shogo nodded.
A friend of my dad's, he said.
He'll see to it that you get out of this country.
I'm assuming you want to do that.
You'll get killed if you stay in the Republic.
You'll be hunted down like rats.
Escape the country? Noriko said, surprised.
We can really do that?
Shuyu asked, who's this friend of your father's?
Shogo looked at them, as if considering something as he held the cigarette to his mouth with his left hand. He removed the cigarette from his mouth and said,
right now isn't a good time to tell you. In case we end up splitting up during our escape, it'd be bad if either of you got caught and shared our plans with the government. It's not that I don't trust you, but once they torture you, you'll eventually end up confessing. So I'll be in charge of getting us there.
Shuyu thought about it and then nodded. It seemed like he was making the right call.
But, let's see, Shogo said. He bit his cigarette and pulled out a piece of paper from his pocket. It looked like the sheet on which they'd all written that statement, "We will kill each other." Shogo tore it in two and then scribbled on both pieces. He folded them up neatly and offered one to Shuyu and the other to Noriko.
What's this? Shuyu asked and began opening it up.
Shogo stopped him, saying, hold on. Don't look at it now. It's our contact method, just in case. The time and location are written on it. Go to that place at the same time every day. I'll do my best to get there, too.
We can't look at it now? Noriko asked.
Nope, Shogo said. Look at it only if we end up splitting up. In other words, your note and Shuya's have different information. It's best you two don't know what's on the other's note, just in case one of you gets caught.
Shuyu and Noriko looked at each other. Then Shuyu turned to Shogo.
I'm going to be with Noriko no matter what.
I know, Shogo grinned wryly. But we can't rule out the possibility you might get separated again, like you two were when Kazuo attacked us.
Shuyu pursed his lips and looked over at Shogo, but ended up nodding. He exchanged glances with Noriko and put away the note.
So did Noriko.
It was true. Anything could happen. Escaping this island in the first place was going to be incredibly difficult. But if that were the case, shouldn't he and Noriko also come up with their own place and time to meet, without telling Shogo? Then again, if Shogo ended up getting caught by the government, their situation would be hopeless anyway.
Shogo asked, so where do you want to go?
Shuyu recalled how Shogo wanted to know their ideal destinations once they fled the country. He folded his arms and thought about it. Then he said,
it'd have to be America. It's where Rock was born. I always wanted to go there at least once.
He thought, I didn't think I'd be escaping to there, though.
I see. Shogo nodded.
What about you, Noriko?
I don't really have anywhere in mind, but, Noriko said and glanced over at Shuyu.
Shuyu nodded back.
Let's go together, all right?
Oh.
Noriko's eyes opened wide. She formed a smile and nodded.
Sure, if you're all right with that.
Shogo smiled. He took another drag from his cigarette and asked, what will you do once you get there?
Shuyu thought about it. Then he answered with a grin.
I'll be busking with my guitar. At least I'll make some change.
Huh, Shogo chuckled.
You best be a rocker, he said. You're talented. From what I hear, in that country the odds aren't stacked so high against you, even if you're an immigrant or exile.
Shuyu took a deep breath and gave him a skeptical grin.
I'm not that talented. I don't have what it takes to be a pro.
I don't know about that.
Shuyu smiled and shook his head. Then he looked over at Noriko.
What about you, Noriko? Anything you want to do?
Noriko pursed her lips. Then she said,
I've always wanted to be a teacher.
Her reply caught Shuyu by surprise since he'd never heard about it.
Really?
He exclaimed. Noriko turned to look at Shuyu and nodded.
You wanted to be a teacher in this lousy country?
Noriko grimaced.
There are good teachers, too.
She looked down.
I thought Mr. Hayashida was a good teacher.
It had been a while since Shuya recalled the corpse of Mr. Hayashido, whose head was half crushed. Dragonfly died for their sake.
You're right, Shuya agreed.
Shogo said, it might be difficult to become a teacher as an exile, but you might be able to do research at some university. Ironically enough, the rest of the world seems very interested in this country. Then you might be able to teach.
He continued staring ahead, then tossed his cigarette butt into the puddle by his feet. He put another cigarette in his mouth and lit it.
So you should go for it, both of you.
Be what you want to be. Follow your heart and give it your best shot.
Shuya thought that was kind of cool.
Follow your heart. Do your best.
The same way the late Shinji Mamura would sometimes say something that hit the mark. Then he realized something.
What about you? He asked anxiously.
What are you going to do?
Shogo shrugged his shoulders.
I told you, it's payback time against this country.
No, that's not it.
They owe me, and they're going to pay me back, no matter what.
I can't join you guys.
No, Noriko said, anguished.
Shuya responded differently, though. He clenched his teeth and said, let me join you.
Shogo looked at Shuya for a moment. Then he looked down and dismissively shook his head.
Don't be stupid.
Why not? Shuya said insistently. You're not the only one with a grudge against this fucking country.
That's right, Noriko insisted.
Her response surprised Shuya.
Noriko looked at Shogo.
We'll do it together.
Shogo looked at them.
He heaved a deep sigh.
He looked up and said, look, I think I told you before that this country might be fucked up, but it's well run. It's almost impossible to take it down.
No, I'd say it's absolutely impossible right now. But I...
He turned around and then looked beyond the roof at the sky, turning white from the receding rain. Then he looked back at them.
To use a cliche, I just want to take a stab at it. I'm getting back at them. I'm only doing it for my own sake, which isn't such a bad thing.
He stopped and then said, no, it's not bad at all.
So then, Shuya said, but Shogo interrupted him, raising his hand. I'm not done.
Shuya shut up and let him speak.
I'm saying you'll die if you join me.
You just said you're going to be with Noriko, which means,
he looked at Noriko.
Then he looked back at Shuya.
You still have Noriko.
You protect her, Shuya. If she's in danger, then fight for her. Whether your assailant's a burglar, the fucking Republic of Greater East Asia, or an extraterrestrial.
Then he turned to Noriko and said kindly,
you too.
You still have Shuya, right?
Protect him, Noriko.
It's foolish to die pointlessly.
Then he looked at Shuya again.
You understand?
There's nothing left for me.
So I'm just doing it for my sake. It's different for you guys.
The last statement sounded adamant. He checked his watch, tossed another cigarette into the puddle, got up, and went out from under the roof. The chirping bird call rang out. As he listened, Shuya recalled a song by a mainland Chinese rocker that went, perhaps you are saying, you love me even though I have nothing at all. But what did Shogo mean when he said he had nothing? After tweaking the bird call for exactly 15 seconds, Shogo went back underneath the roof and sat down. Noriko asked Shogo gently, don't you have someone you care about?
Shuya had wanted to ask that too.
Shogo opened his eyes and then forced a grin. I wasn't planning on telling you, but, he said, and then took a deep breath.
No. Maybe I did want to tell you.
He reached behind for his back pocket and pulled out his wallet. He removed a photo with frayed edges.
Noriko took it. She and Shuya looked at it.
The photo included Shogo. He was wearing a school coat and his hair was as long as Shuya's. He was smiling a bashful smile that was hard to imagine on him now. And on his left was a girl in a sailor suit uniform. Her black hair was bundled over her right shoulder. She looked assertive, but her smile was incredibly charming, too. In the background were a road, ginkgo-like trees, a whiskey billboard ad, and a yellow car.
She's beautiful,
Noriko exclaimed. Shogo rubbed the tip of his nose.
Really?
She's not what you'd call typically beautiful, but I always thought she was pretty.
Noriko shook her head.
Well, I think she's very pretty and very mature-looking. Is she the same age as you?
Shogo broke into a bashful grin reminiscent of the one he wore in the photo.
Yeah, thanks. Shuya gazed at the two smiling faces next to each other in the photo and thought, Hey, what do you mean you have nothing? But Shuya had overlooked something crucial.
So is she in Kobe? Shuya asked.
Shogo grimaced. He shook his head and said,
Remember Shuya?
I played this fucking game once before. And I was the winner. That was when Shuya realized, and Noriko probably did too. Her face stiffened. She was in my class. I wasn't able to save Keiko. They fell silent. Shuya finally felt he could truly understand Shogo's anger, the sheer depth of it.
So you see now, Shogo said, I really have nothing.
And it's payback time against this country for killing Keiko.
Shogo put another cigarette in his mouth and lit it.
Smoke drifted by.
So her name was Keiko, Shuya finally said.
Yeah.
Shogo gave several small nods. Kei means joy.
Shuya realized it was the same kanji character as the first character in Yoshitoki's name.
Were you, Noriko gently asked, with her until the very end?
Shogo smoked silently. After a while, he replied, That's a hard one to answer. Her last name was Inuki. The roll call started with number 17 in that game.
Whatever.
Anyway, Keiko's number came before mine, so she left three numbers before me.
Shuya and Noriko listened quietly.
I thought she might be waiting for me somewhere near the departure point.
She just might be.
But she wasn't there.
I mean, it couldn't be helped.
Just like with this current game. It was dangerous to hang around the departure point. He took a drag from his cigarette and exhaled. But I finally found her. The game took place on an island like this one. But I found her.
He took another drag and exhaled.
But she ran away.
Shuya was shocked.
He looked at Shogo. His stubbly face remained calm. It seemed like he was doing his best to restrain his emotions.
I tried chasing after her, but I was attacked by someone else. I managed to kill that person, but I ended up losing sight of her.
He took another drag and then exhaled.
Keiko couldn't trust me.
He still wore his poker face, but there was a tense look in his eyes.
But I still looked for her. The next time I found her, she was dead.
Shuya understood. Once he was back here, Shuya had told him about Yuki Utsumi's group and observed, It's so hard to trust someone.
To which Shogo responded,
Yes, it is. It's very hard.
Shuya now saw why Shogo looked so uneasy then. He also understood why Shogo said Hiroki might have found Kotohiki dead, or that she might not necessarily trust him.
Shuya, Shogo said.
Shuya looked up.
When we first met, you asked me why I trusted you guys, right?
Yeah, Shuya nodded.
I did.
And I believe I said you two made a nice couple, Shogo said and glanced up at the roof.
By the time he lowered his eyes, the tension in his cheeks was gone.
It's true.
That's how you two looked.
So I decided I wanted to help you guys out, unconditionally.
Uh-huh.
Shuya nodded.
After a while, Noriko said, I bet...
Shuya looked over at Noriko.
She was just terrified and confused.
No. Shogo shook his head.
I really loved Keiko, but there must have been something about the way I treated her when we were going out. That's what I think it came down to.
That's so wrong, Shuya adamantly insisted.
Shogo looked over at him, his arms folded over his pulled-up knees. The smoke from the cigarette in his hands drifted up gently, like silk.
There was a misunderstanding, A small misunderstanding, I'm sure. Given how fucked up this game is, the odds are against you. That's what it really comes down to, right? Shogo grimaced wryly again and only replied, I don't know. I'll never know. Then he tossed his cigarette into the puddle and took out the bird call from his pocket. This, he said. Unlike most city kids, Keiko loved to go on mountain walks. The Sunday after the week that fucking game happened, she was supposed to take me birdwatching. Holding it between his right thumb and index finger, he raised the bird call up to his eyes and examined it as if it were a jewel. She gave this to me. He smiled and looked at Shuya and Noriko. This is the only thing I have left of hers. It's my lucky charm. Didn't bring much luck, I guess. As he put it away, Noriko returned the photo. Shogo put it back in his wallet, which he tucked into his back pocket. Noriko said, Hey, Shogo. Shogo looked up at her. I don't know how Keiko felt at the time, but... She flicked her tongue against her lips to moisten them. But I think Keiko loved you in her own way. She had to. I mean, she looked so happy in that photo, don't you think? Yeah? Of course she did. Noriko nodded. And if I were Keiko, I would want you to live. I wouldn't want you to die for me. Shogo grinned and shook his head. Well, that's just a difference of opinion. But, Noriko insisted, please take it under consideration. Okay? Please? Shogo's lips moved as if he were on the verge of saying something. But then he shrugged and smiled. Sadly. He checked his watch and went out from under the roof to tweak the bird call. Four students remaining. Chapter 73. It had stopped raining completely by the sixth time Shogo tweaked the bird call. It was now 5:55 p.m., but the light, which now seemed brilliant compared to the preceding hours, enveloped the island. They removed the thatched roof from the rock wall. After sitting against the rock wall, the open sky above, Noriko said, The sky's clear. Shuya and Shogo both nodded. A soft breeze rustled by. Shogo put another cigarette in his mouth and lit it. Staring at Shogo's profile, Shuya hesitated over whether he should bring it up or not. He decided to speak. Shogo. The cigarette dangling from one end of his mouth, Shogo looked up. What about you? What did you want to be? Shogo snickered as he exhaled. I wanted to be a doctor, like my old man. I thought at least a doctor could help people, even in this fucked up country. Shuya felt relieved. Then why don't you become one? You're certainly talented enough. Tapping the ashes from his cigarette, Shogo shook his head as if to say the discussion was over. Noriko said, Shogo. He looked at Noriko. I know I'm repeating myself, but I have to say it. If I were Keiko, this is what I'd say. She looked up at the sky, now tinged with orange. Please live. Talk. Think. Act. And sometimes listen to music. She stopped briefly. Look at paintings. Allow yourself to be moved. Laugh a lot. And at times, cry. And if you find a wonderful girl, then you go for her and love her. It was poetic. Pure poetry. And then Shuya thought, Oh, these are Noriko's words. And words along with music had an incredible, holy power. Shogo listened without saying a word. Because that's the Shogo that I really loved. Then she looked over at Shogo. She seemed slightly embarrassed, but added, That's what Keiko would have said. The ash on Shogo's cigarette grew longer. Shuya said, Come on, Shogo. Aren't there ways to tear up this country without dying? It might be a roundabout way, but still. He paused, then went on. I mean, we got to be such good friends. We'd really miss you. Let's go to America, the three of us. Shogo fell silent. Then realizing his cigarette was burnt down to the filter, he tossed it away. He looked up at them. He was on the verge of saying something. Shuya thought, "Come with us, Shogo. We'll be together. We're a team." "Hey." It was the all-too-familiar voice of Sakamochi. Shuya quickly lifted his left arm with his right hand and checked his watch. The muddy display read 6 p.m. exactly, 5 seconds past the hour. "Can you hear me? Well, I guess there aren't too many of you left who can hear. Now then, I will announce the dead. Now in the boys' group..." Shuya was already thinking. There were only 4 boys left, Shuya, Shogo, Hiroki, and Kazuo Kiriyama. Of course, the same was true with the girls, Noriko, Kayoko Kotohiki, Mitsuko Saoma, and Mizuo Inada. Kazuo couldn't die so easily. And Hiroki had sent the signal, so none of the boys were dead. "We have only one. Number 11, Hiroki Sugimura." Shuya's eyes opened wide. 4 students remaining. Part 4. Finish. 4 students remaining. Chapter 74. Now then, with the girls, the body count was pretty high. Number 1, Mizuo Inada. Number 2, Yuki Utsumi. Number 8, Kayoko Kotohiki. Number 9, Yuko Sakaki. Number 11, Mitsuko Saoma. Number 12, Haruka Tanizawa. Number 16, Yuka Nakagawa. Number 17, Satomi Noda. And number 19, Chisato Matsui. Shuya's eyes met Noriko's. Her eyes were trembling. They had already been prepared to hear about Yuki's group, but Hiroki and Kayoko too? And Matsuka Saoma and Mizuo Inada? The only ones left were the 3 of them and Kazuo. "That can't be," Shuya uttered. Ever since the smoke signal went up, there hadn't been any gunfire. Or was Hiroki stabbed? Or did he not hear Sakamochi's announcement correctly? Were his ears playing tricks on him? No. Sakamochi continued. "All right then. Now there are 4 students remaining. Can you hear me, Kiriyama, Kawada, Nanahara, and Nakagawa? Wonderful work. I'm really proud of you all. Now then, I'll announce the new forbidden zones." Before Shuya could mark his map, Shogo said, "Gather your stuff." "Huh?" Shuya asked, but Shogo only signaled for him to hurry up. Sakamochi continued, "From 7 p.m., get up, it's Kazuo. It's likely he somehow found out about Hiroki's method to contact us. We might have been sending our signal to Kazuo all this time." Shuya immediately got up. Noriko was carrying her day pack on her shoulders. Then, just before Sakamochi finished his announcement saying, "All right then, do your best. Just a little more to go." Shuya saw Shogo's eyes glance at that alarm system consisting of notches cut into thin trees wrapped with thin wire. And then he saw this wire fall off the rain-drenched tree trunk. "Duck!" Shogo yelled. The rattling burst through. Right above Shuya's and Noriko's heads, the rock wall burst into sparks. Its shards rained down on them. Crouching down, Shogo fired the Uzi into the shrubs. Maybe he was hit or maybe he wasn't, but Kazuo, who else could it be now, didn't return fire. Shogo said, "This way, hurry." They ran south along the rock wall away from Kazuo. Once they reached the area beyond the rock wall where Shogo had been using the bird call, they heard a gun rattle again. It missed them. They entered the bushes ahead. There was a crevice in the rock, waist deep, less than a meter wide. Covered with dirt and leaves, it continued southward. Shuya didn't know about its existence, but Shogo probably chose their position with this place in mind. It was a naturally formed trench. Shogo urged them on. Shuya and Noriko jumped down. Shogo rattled off his Uzi and followed them. A different rattling sounded from behind. A thin tree with roots along the edge of the crevice exploded with a pop right by Shuya's head. "Run!" Shogo shouted, and they ran down the crevice. Shuya almost tripped over a dry branch lying on the ground, but he managed to regain his footing and followed after Noriko. Behind them, the two guns exchanged shots. Suddenly, Noriko stopped as if she were hit by something. She moaned and doubled over. Shuyo, who was turned toward Shogo, quickly ran to Noriko. Did she trip over something? No. She looked up at Shuyo. A cut ran under her left eye and blood streamed down her cheek. Maybe her right hand was cut too then. It was also bloody. The brownie that had been in her hand was on the ground by her feet. Shuyo put his right hand on her shoulder, looked up, and found a thin, twisted wire stretched out across the crevice, neck high. It didn't matter where Kazuo had found it. He'd probably unfastened the wire used to secure some object. Kazuo had already anticipated their escape by this route. At Shuya's height, the wire would have cut right into his neck. At least this didn't happen to Noriko, but she could have lost her sight. Shuyo was furious. I don't know what Kazuo is about. Shogo had said, he just chooses as he goes. I don't know if he's abnormal or normal, or a kind of genius or madman, but hurting Noriko? That was just unforgivable. I'm going to kill that motherfucker. He tucked his CZ-75 in front to help Noriko up, picked up the Browning, and then held Noriko's shoulder with the gun in his hand. Noriko staggered but managed to get up. Shogo caught up as he fired away. He glanced back at the two of them and then, maybe he caught a glance of the wire, clenched his teeth. As Shogo turned around again, Shuyo looked beyond him and saw Kazuo Kiriyama, still in a school coat, jump into the crevice. Shogo yelled, "Duck!" as he fired away, holding his machine gun. Kazuo quickly ducked behind a curve in the crevice. Shogo's shots tore at the rock along the curve. Dust flew up. "Run!" Shogo repeated. Shuyo held Noriko up and proceeded to run under the wire. He slowed down, though, in case of any more wire traps. Shuyo was frustrated. If only he could use both of his arms, then he could pummel Kazuo with bullets while he held Noriko. Shogo fired away as he stuck close to them from behind. Kazuo also returned gunfire as he approached them. The crevice that continued for 50 or 60 meters came to an end. Shuyo leaped up to the ground before Noriko. He took Noriko's uninjured left hand and pulled her up. Noriko bravely stiffened her face to conceal her pain, but the left half of her face was now covered with blood. "Don't stop," Shogo yelled over the gunfire. Shuyo pulled Noriko's hand and dashed into the bushes ahead. Once they came out of the bushes, they found themselves in the front yard of a residential house built against the side of a mountain. It was an old, single-story building. There was a white light truck right next to an entrance road in front of the house. For some reason, there was a washer and refrigerator, both on their sides, loaded in the light truck. Were they being dumped? "Get behind the truck," Shogo shouted. Shuya and Noriko stepped onto the rain-drenched soil. Holding each other's hands, they made their way behind the truck. By the time Shogo followed and slid in, Shuya had Noriko sit down, the Browning in his hand. He caught a glimpse of a figure moving in the shrubs. He shot several times at it. He felt a searing pain through his left shoulder from the bullet lodged inside it. The pain sizzled, but he had to ignore it. Shogo reloaded a magazine into his Uzi and handed it over to Shuya. He said, "Shoot away. Hold him back." Shuya put his Browning down by his feet, took the Uzi, and fired away at the area where Kazuo appeared again. Kazuo didn't shoot back. As Shuya peeked above the pickup truck rack, Noriko planted herself right next to him. In her hands was the Browning he had put down. "Are you all right, Noriko?" he asked as he checked for Kazuo's movements in the shrubs. "I'm okay," Noriko replied. Shuya glanced beyond Noriko over at Shogo. Shogo opened the door, dove into the driver's seat, and started working on something. With the sudden revving sound, the truck Shuya and Noriko were leaning against lurched to life. The revving became a low hum, and the water drops on the truck body began trickling with a soft vibration. Shogo poked his head out. "Come on, we're getting out of here. Noriko, hurry!" Shogo offered her his hand and helped her into the truck. "Shuya, the front passenger seat!" Shogo shouted as he started backing up the truck. He steered the wheel, backed the truck toward Kazuo, and then turned it around. The passenger seat door was there for Shuya. Noriko opened the door. The rattling exploded as Shuya reached out his right hand to get in. This time, though, it was accompanied by a hammering sound. A hole formed in the truck's narrow cabin ceiling and the